Give me a beat. Thank you for pushing play. You are listening to the Ray Reyes Fundamental Podcast, episode 33. Baseball's so confusing. No one really cares about the guy on the bottom. No one really cares about the guy beneath. And everybody wants to be down with the dude on top of the stairs. Top of the stairs. Cause no one really cares about the guy on the bottom. No one really cares about the guy beneath. And everybody wants to be down with the dude on top of the stairs. Top of the stairs. Little brother, look around. What's up, Internet? This is the Ray Reyes Fundamental Podcast, episode 33, recorded on October the 16th, 2015, brought to you by RayRay.net and the Happy Hour Network. I am your sexy party host, Ray Ray. If this is your first time listening to this podcast, let me give you a rundown. I am an NBA online writer, so expect to hear a lot of NBA talk here, but I'd also talk about other sports here and interests. TV shows, video games, wrestling, etc. I talk to most of my friends here who are mostly sports personalities about those sort of things. And I also have a couple of segments going here. I talk old school nostalgic stuff with my friend Edie Christian, and I talk to the Gal Pal Squad about fashion and dating and other things. It's just a nice little talk about the fundamentals of life. And I'm not going to delay this any further. In this episode, my guest is the mass sensation of TNA Impact Wrestling, TJ Perkins, also known as Manic. No, he did not buy this on me or Adam, but we had a lot of good sports talk, including TJ's very extensive sports background. Let's get into it. Scratch!
Ray Ray is Fundamental, episode 33. This is Ray Ray. Joining me, as always, Adam Jacoby. What's up?
Not a whole lot, man. How you doing?
You need to be more excited than this, because we all know that your Cubs are in the NLCS.
Oh, I am well aware. If we had recorded this yesterday, I would have been recording live from my ceiling, as I would be crawling on it. No, this is great. I'm just sort of settling into the dread that is now that we have to face the Mets pitchers. Like, it's not the Dodgers, and I'm thrilled about that, but, the Mets DJ's might not have the most complete rotation and bullpen and pitching staff in general, like, of anybody in the playoffs. So I'm easing my way into that now.
Mm-hmm. We'll get into that a little bit later as I attempt to talk baseball, which is, like, the worst thing ever. But our guest, he wrestles as Manic on TNA Impact Wrestling. You can see that on Destination America on Wednesday nights. TJ Perkins, what's up, my man?
See, I have a pass for sounding bummed out because I'm a Dodger guy. So.
Yeah, I was just gonna say that. Yeah, like you're a Dodgers guy, and
so I get to have a bad day today.
So you had a bad day. The Dodgers lost a game. Something. You know that song.
Yeah, I do know that song, yeah.
Yeah, it played in slow motion the whole time I saw Greinke race to third only to lose to Murphy.
Yeah, so what happened there? What happened on that play?
The entire series came down to Greinke walking to the mound slowly. It really did. You think about it, it's kind of funny. A one-run ball game, it came down to Greinke not watching Murphy jog the third. The whole series came down to two guys, one of them paying attention more than he should have, and the other not paying attention at all. Like, if I was the other, like, 50 guys in the respective rosters, I'd be like, I can't believe you guys just decided this series on your own. How selfish.
Why did I even show up?
Oh, I can't imagine how much more upset Andre Ethier was after that in the clubhouse, because he was pretty upset when they were just playing competitive baseball.
Yeah, so TJ, how are you doing? Like, how's your body holding up? How are things in TNA right now?
Everything's good. I'm sore today because I ran sprints yesterday and I started sprinting again. I hadn't done that in a while. As far as part of my regular training, so I'm still getting used to that. I feel like when I was playing team sports growing up, like it feels like I'm in camp before the season starts. Like I'm like, oh, every day. But
what did you play?
Oh, I played everything. You name it, I played. I probably logged more seasons in basketball and baseball than anything. I think mostly because you could do it at a younger age. So I did maybe 13 years of baseball, 10 or 11 years of basketball.
You still play basketball.
I try to, but you know, it's weird.
Obviously,
I was
you're wrestling. So.
I was not organized. But I mean, I wish I could find a city league or something like that, but I always put it off. But I actually just was shooting around at the park for the first time in maybe like a year. So it's been a little while since I've played
Has
ball.
It been that long? Because you were showing off your free throws on Twitter, like, it feels like recently.
That was probably a year ago, and I may have showed somebody recently because they were asking when the last time I touched a basketball was. And I don't know, I'm still like, you know, 8 for 10 or 9 for 10 from the line, and my hands are still pretty good. But every now and then I'll pull up for a jumper and throw it over the top to the grass behind. So.
How long did you play football at all?
I played I played at a young age and all the way through about high school. I started giving up stuff in high school because my freshman year I started wrestling. So then it was like, except for basketball, I kind of had to started kind of thinning out, and basketball was the one I kind of kept all the way through varsity.
Mm-hmm. Right. So aren't you, like, going to overseas soon with TNA and everything?
You know, the company is organizing a trip overseas, but not the whole roster is set up yet for it. For us, we're sort of still in the preliminary stages of getting our paperwork done. So, I mean, from an office standpoint, I'm sure they're farther along. But, I mean, that's above my pay grade, fellas.
Yeah, because I heard things about you guys going to England and India, which I hear is really big over there. TNA is.
Yeah, annually we do a Europe trip to the UK. That's in the end of winter, usually January, February. So that's coming up. Those dates are set too. So I mean, for anybody that's listening, it's the same week I think that it was last year. The same that we do every year, and there's information online. They just announced that they're going to use it for TV tapings as well. So it'll be fun.
Mm-hmm. Adam, you have any questions him regarding his wrestling career?
Or? Yeah. So like, how did that get started? Like you said that in high school you started wrestling. Was that like? Like high school grappling, like actual wrestling, or were you working toward pro wrestling at that young age?
I always wanted, like, I always figured I would do pro wrestling, like what we see on TV, the racket that I'm in now. I always figured I would do it someday when I was younger, and then I was an all-sport athlete growing up, and my dad was a big athlete growing up in Kansas City, so he had me doing everything, and when I got to high school, I figured I would wrestle on an amateur team or something like that, and then I could, you know, worry about pro wrestling afterward, and like my dad had me attending NCAA-bound athlete meetings and stuff like that, but I found out we didn't have an amateur program at the school, so I was really disappointed. And that was just like my first like week of high school in my freshman year. So then I started, it's weird to say this, but I started writing letters to places that I knew were like pro wrestling gyms that you would see. Also weird. You would see like the advertisements in like magazines, like for the gyms and stuff like that. And I say it's weird because now you would just go on, you know, Google or something. But in 1998, it was like the internet wasn't really like there was like 7 websites total. Like, right. So you couldn't do anything electronically. So I wrote out to a bunch, but I was only 13, so I couldn't relocate. And most gyms, they wouldn't let you start, and you're like, unless you're 18 or 21 or something like that. But luckily I grew up in Southern California, and Los Angeles is a heavy Lucha Libre culture. And a lot of the gyms, you know, are a lot more flexible and acceptable for age differences. And so I found one that let me start, and it just became my job. And before I knew it, 17 years passed by. I started wrapping up all my sports. And, like I said, I stayed with basketball and I ran track and field, but like I gave up football and baseball and, you know, other stuff. And, and it's now here I am.
TJ, how's a typical week like for you right now?
A typical week?
Yeah.
I don't know if I have one. I kind of gave up numbers on a calendar or a clock, to be honest. Even during a day, like in a 24-hour period, I'll just sleep when I'm tired. I kind of don't know what days are sometimes. Mostly just because sometimes, and it doesn't always happen this way, but sometimes your travel gets so hectic that your body doesn't even have jet lag anymore. You just, like, everything just feels like one long day. So you kind of have to, I feel like this must be what it's like to be like an astronaut. Like, you kind of have to regulate yourself, like, based on, okay, I guess I've been awake for 12 hours or something. I should probably start winding down. I don't know. Sometimes it's busy. Every now and then I'll get like a week or two off and it's really nice, but
right. Yeah, because you're on Twitter like 3 a.m, like, why is he up again?
Yeah, it's just one of those times, and I'll just be on Netflix or something, and I'll see, oh, okay, I could retweet this picture a fan drew of me, or, you know, somebody in the UK will, you know, say like, oh, you know, like, I saw this game the other day, and I'm like, oh yeah, I saw it too, you know, and I don't realize it's still 4 a.m. But
one more thing before we move on to baseball, you removed the mask on television recently, and then now you put it back on. What's going on here? Everyone knows what you look like now.
It's not even the first time it's happened either. Yeah. It's, to be honest, it's not my choice. If I had it my way, I would just be me. I think that's what everybody wants to, because I get this question from everybody. Right. And, you know, like, I did an interview recently for Rappler, and so, like, a lot of the, like, my Asian American fans and Filipinos specifically are, you know, they would like me to be able to represent as myself. And, but, you know, it's just one of those things. It's just not up to me.
It's just weird, that's all, because usually if you remove your mask, that's it, you know, that's, they know your face.
Yeah, I agree. It's very weird, but, I don't know. I guess maybe this is like when you see like a sitcom or like, you know, your favorite TV show and you find out, oh, did you know season 3 was actually just this guy's dream? Yeah, you find out in season 4, episode 1. So If I wonder, like, what it's like to be that actor playing that character, it's like you show up to work the next day and it's like, oh, okay, we're really doing this? Okay.
We'll be right back with more TJ Perkins in this long sports podcast after this break.
This is Zach Harper of CBSSports.com. You're listening to Ray Ray's Fundamental Podcast, because Ray Ray is fundamental. You know, like those NBA commercials with the reading is fundamental. You get what I mean.
I want to talk about baseball because two things happened. Obviously, one's a huge debate, and I wanted to talk about this a few days ago. But the whole Chase Utley slide thing, TJ was for it.
Really?
And I know. Yeah.
Well,
we'll talk about
I guess with multiple caveats, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, obviously, yeah. And then me and Adam were talking about this off the record. It's like, man, that's kind of messed up to hear the guy, you know? And I've seen a lot of hot takes between, you know, the slide was legal, the slide was illegal, all that stuff. So, TJ, to start with you, and you played baseball for 13 years, you mentioned. So, obviously, you have, like, kind of an inside track on this.
Well, the other thing is, I also played middle infielder for 13 years. So, I was a second baseman.
Oh, okay.
So, like, I've been hit like Tejada I mean, that was like a weekly thing. So I think a lot of it, and you'd see like a lot of the takes from the, from other middle, like Hairston and other guys chimed in. I mean, I don't, there's a lot. So, but, and most of them, you know, nobody likes to see anybody get hurt. Like that sucks for Tejada. I mean, that's rough. But the thing that I think, and I'm sure it's not something that like, it's not a thing maybe for the three of us, but for like fair weather fans or people that maybe watch baseball 2 hours a year, they don't understand that like I'm sure Tejada knew he was going to get hit. Every middle infielder knows that that play is 100 years old. I'm not really, I wasn't for the play. I personally think, just like with the Posey rule, I think it should change. I think all collisions should change. I think they should develop rules to eliminate all of them, because I just think that in this instance, and it's something a lot of the analysts were kind of getting into as well, I understand why Utley was a scapegoat for it, because that's this perfect time for them to step in. Like, everybody got hit at the plate, but they only changed it for Buster Posey. In this instance, it's a huge game. An underdog team got screwed by a team that the public, for the most part, fans have grown to hate the Dodgers. You know, like, you know, we hate the $1 billion payroll. We did that to the Yankees for decades, and the Dodgers are that now, and that's just, that's fair. That's the way it is, you know. We hate the Patriots, you know, so like, so we got Deflategate, but, so I think I understand why they use this. Okay, this is perfect. We put a spotlight on this. In the offseason, we can make a rule. Done deal. Everybody will support it. Nobody will question it. I didn't think – the only reason I didn't think Utley's slide wasn't dirty was because the same exact play has happened between Utley and Tejada before with the same exact slide.
I did see
and
that.
And Tejada, even – he doesn't even disagree. He was fine with it. So I just think, like, they kind of made it a rule – or – I think people are reacting to the injury, not the play. You know what I'm saying? Like, there was no suspension or anything. It was totally play on. It's, he's turning two. He broke up the double. We've seen this since 1901. That was the previous play in 2010. So, like, this time Tejada got hurt. It affected the game. So now I feel like people are kind of, I felt like they, like, Utley was kind of an unfair scapegoat, but in the grand scheme of things, that's where the league was going to step in. That's just the right thing.
So, yeah, I don't. And they were already on edge after the injury to I'm blanking on the Pirates infielder, the one that got hurt against the Cubs.
Right. Yeah. I know.
So everyone was already sensitive to begin with about it, and if that doesn't happen, I think people's reactions to Tejada's injury would have been different. I think it the gung injury sort of changed the landscape ahead of time, and so that played into it as well. The one thing I agree with you. People have been breaking up double plays like that since time immemorial. It's always been part of baseball. What perturbed me though was that Utley didn't even begin his slide until he was like at the bag, didn't touch the base. You know, he hit the fielder before he hit the ground. And, you know, it was, I think that people, you sort of have to, it's this weird thing where you have to pretend that you're sliding, even when everybody in the entire stadium knows you're trying to take this guy out. But Utley was just so egregious about it, like he didn't put forth the little bit of effort to try to convince people that, oh no, I was just trying to slide. That sort of played into you know, why people were like, well, now hang on, just a second. So like if it ends up that they make a rule where you have to be on the ground before you make contact with the fielder, or like if you don't touch the base that you're like you're automatically out into double play, like if they want to make those like incremental rules like that, I'd be fine with it, you know. Just and But then, you know, at the same time, say, we're never going to get rid of all collisions at second base. It's, I mean, it's two people going to the same spot. That is a collision. That you can't have that not happen, right?
Well, like, have you did you see the 2010 play between Tejada and Utley?
I didn't.
The slide by Utley is such a gray area because I've seen so much worse, but I've also seen a lot more agreeable ones. But the thing is, the only reason I don't like the way people are judging Utley is because he's broken up that slide is identical to every slide he's ever broken up any double play ever. And nobody's ever said a word. He's even hit that exact guy before. And when I mean exactly the same, I mean he didn't – every other time he does the exact same thing. He doesn't slide until he gets right over the base. He doesn't even touch the base. He hits the guy
first. Yeah, I'm watching it now.
Yeah, it looks the same every time.
Yeah, it's the same play. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not that I think people are necessarily wrong because it's a gray area. You could be right. You could be wrong. I just think it's like if it was so bad this time, like why do they punish him now? Like they could have done that anytime he's ever slid ever. It just seems like and I agree with the motive because this is going to probably spark a positive change. So that's why it's like I'm not really for the slide. I just think that it was an obvious target that was not consistent with previous stuff. I guess regarding collisions, I kind of feel like, and it's weird because I was a middle infielder, but I feel like they need to install rules that put the onus on the fielder more so than the runner. Because fielders know, especially if you tell them now there's going to be a rule, they get hit, and then, you know, there's a penalty on the runner. They're going to – I mean, it's like taking a charge and bat, like a flopping penalty. You know what I'm saying? Like they're still going to get in the base path in front or behind the bag because they know if they get clipped, you know, that'll be a penalty on the runner. I know I would do that if I was still playing second base. I knew that if I stood directly behind the bag or in front of it, like somewhere where the runner will – it's in the runner's path, I would totally stand there just because if I get clipped a little bit, it's done. So I kind of feel like – because it's like with the Posey rule, they say no collisions – but they still allow catchers to block the plate. So it's like, well, what is the runner supposed to do? You know? Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. It's sort of like
it's problematic in solving it. Yeah. Yeah.
Like a punter is just going to leave his leg up in the air about 15 seconds after the punch.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
If anybody touches him, I fell over. Give me 15 yards.
Yeah. Like I feel like if there's anything they need to examine when they adjust the rule, which I know that they'll make some sort of rule in the off season, is that I hope that they have the foresight to see that fielders are slick, you know, like they'll find a way to expose an inconsistency.
Yeah, totally.
Like I said, I don't watch much baseball, but Chase Utley makes the same slide every time. That seems dangerous.
Yeah, that's kind of what I said.
A lot of guys are like that, though. Like, yeah. Matt Holliday has made a career, and he's like 240 pounds. Like, Matt Holliday is a giant human being, and he just tackles middle infielders at second base.
Oh, yeah. I've seen guys that, like, basically don't even go down or go spikes up every time. That's kind of also why I was thinking, like, I'm even as a Dodger fan and as a second baseman, I see why people could say Utley's side is dirty, but it's like there are so much worse, and he's been doing the same one for years. Like, kind of, you know, it's just like it's so hard to judge.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many examples.
I had no idea it was like that bad. Okay.
Well, it's just it's kind of a. I mean, it's the definition of a gray area because there's like a slide is like a signature. Everybody's going to be a little different.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just didn't think they would do it that late. You know what I mean? Like it's almost like a dropkick to the legs or something like that. You know?
Well, and that's the other thing too. A lot of fans I saw that like were so opinionated about it. It made me wonder. It's like, have you ever touched the field? Because like I was taught to do that at like 8 years old. Like 10 years old, you're taught break up double plays, and if you're a middle infielder, know that they're trying to hit you, so get out of the way. So that's why like some of the people are like, oh, this is like that's like borderline assault. I'm like, give me a, like, come on.
Yeah, it's called sports.
Yes, there should be a rule that prevents this because, you know, the game has been around 100 years. We could start making it better. But if you played, then, I mean, kindergartners are taught to get out of the way of the path. And at 10 years old, I was taught how to slide big and you know, break up a throw. It's just, you know, it's just one of those things.
That's why I didn't say much when the play happened. And I was texting Adam. I was like, what do you think of this? I was intrigued by all the hot takes going on social media.
Not only that, and I don't think Tejada did this, but some infielders do this. Like, some infielders are taught at an early age that because that's coming, to leave a leg or something out there and teach the runners not to try to do that to you. So, like, I've seen more dangerous stuff happen in terms of runners getting hit. So that the next time they come around, they're like, I'm not trying to break up a double play. This guy's going to kick me in the face.
Right.
So it's just one of those things that, I mean, there's going to be a rule, and I'm personally happy for it because I think at least some adjustment should be made just in the way of progress. But
Adam, one more thing. You want to say something else?
No, I mean, I think that I'm pretty much in agreement with TJ on this one, that, you know, you – especially once we get into the situations where, you know, these guys are worth 8-9 figures and we learn more and more about, like, concussions and brain health and things like that. You know, the same day that the Utley slide happened, we also had Josh Donaldson, you know, an MVP candidate, have to leave the game because he took a knee to the face because he was breaking up a double play. And people didn't, you know, call that dirty, and I guess it wasn't, but, you know, that's also – sort of something that factors into the equation, and if it were up to owners, you know, they'd be like, yeah, let's not have that happen ever. I don't want my MVP guy taking the knee to the grill. So yeah, I mean, I think something's coming in the off season.
I thought the rule, the weird rule examination as far as the challenge and whether, like, how neither guy touched the bag.
Uh-huh.
I thought that was more interesting than the
for sure
questionable. Like, when he broke up the double play, even when Tejada was carted off, like, not that I didn't feel bad for Tejada, but I was like, okay, I see this every day, but this is really interesting. What are they going to do with the runner? Because this is unprecedented. They never had that before.
For sure. Mm. Yeah, I couldn't believe they awarded him a base that he never touched. I don't think that I've ever seen that before.
I didn't think that they were going to reset him either. Yeah, it's just, it was, it's weird because then, I mean, then they're like, at the end of the day, I guess, what do you do? Because he didn't get tagged and only one side can viably challenge because that you can only challenge the ruling on the field. And I'm like, well, this is weird. Like, I've never seen something like this happen before.
Yeah.
Speaking of weird things in baseball, the Texas Toronto game where the catcher tries to throw the ball back to the pitcher, it hits the batter and the ball basically, you know, goes away, and the runner comes home, and they scored a run even after the umpire called timeout. That's
super weird. Greatest baseball game video of all time.
easily the best.
Yeah. Well, the reason that you haven't seen it is because usually after every pitch,
that's weird.
You know, for decades, the batter would just hop out of the box.
Do we blame this on pace of game?
I absolutely blame the pace of game.
I never thought about that. That's genius analysis. I totally forgot.
Yeah, that's why it's never been a thing before. And it's not like the batter was doing anything untoward or was trying to make that happen because, you know, like you said, nobody's ever seen this happen before. This is a totally brand new thing to ever happen. But, I mean, you stick out your arm, you mess with your bat in your gloves and this and that, and then all of a sudden the throw bounces off of it. And I don't blame the umpire for saying, okay, now hang on, let's not. I mean, it was a correct interpretation of the rules, like, at the end, but I can see why Toronto was super salty about the play being blown dead and then the runner scoring anyway.
Yeah, that's weird. Like, I don't even know the rules about this. Like,
right.
I asked my friend
somewhere David
to baseball,
is just nodding,
and he had no idea that this was a rule or anything like
all
that.
All of that. I guarantee David Ortiz is sitting at home laughing. Just happy to see pace of game ruin something.
And I love that everything that they try to do for Pace's game. None of it revolves around minimizing TV timeouts and commercial time or anything like that.
Oh, I know,
that.
Yeah.
Whoops.
for every really, jeez, yeah, and of course you know Toronto comes back and they and you know Jose Bautista, right? Yeah, the home run, and people were talking about the bat flips and everything like that, which me and Adam talked about with Lana a few episodes ago about bat flips and how
I don't
why is that a big deal?
Not
like,
only do I not get why
you
that's
can't have
a
emotion
big deal
in baseball or something
from a like from a rules standpoint. In any league, I don't get why it's a big deal for social commentary. Like who doesn't like who doesn't want like the same guy who's on Twitter saying purists players shouldn't play like this is going to unload on whoever's team just lost that his team beat. And I'm like,
right,
you're,
totally.
You're virtually bat flipping at this. You're keyboard. Yes. You are keyboard flipping at these poor fans.
who are strangers to you.
Yeah. Meanwhile, the guy, Bautista and the pitcher might go and have a drink afterward because a lot of these guys are friends and they really don't care that much about their personal rivalry. Like, Red Sox and Yankees go out together sometimes. Like, yes, yeah, so, I mean, that's the part that I don't get is the social commentary, because not only are you guys doing it to other fans, but you're rubbing it in. But it's like we're all entertained by this. Like, if you're a Toronto fan and you're a baseball purist, you don't fault Dave. You know, you're not mad at Bautista for that at all.
You spend your entire career waiting for a moment like that.
Yeah, if you're
like,
a Rangers fan.
You should be hyped about that. If you're not, like, man, come on.
If you're a Rangers fan or an Orioles fan, you're like, oh, what an ugly guy this dude is. Like, come on. This is stupid. Yeah. You know why? Because Machado, it didn't come off Machado's bat. That's why you don't like it.
Right,
happens
exactly.
To your team.
And I get the sense that and nobody's going to come right out and say it, but I feel like – if it were a white batter showing up a Hispanic pitcher, that you wouldn't hear nearly as much fuss about it. Like, Tim McCarver's not going to be wailing and grasping at his pearls afterwards. But
yeah,
I mean, they're like, oh, how could you do that to like? And they don't, you know, explicitly think this, but in some corner of their brain, they're like, Jose guy showing up a white pitcher, respect the game.
It's an archaic way of thinking. Like, I mean, people acted like Puig was the first guy to flip a bat.
Oh my god, no!
In like 30 years, like, give me a break. Like, but I mean, I agree.
Yeah, I remember that.
I feel like a lot of old school people still think like, oh well, that's a Dominican thing. Like the Latin players do stuff like that because that's how they play the game down there. And it's like, come on. Like, I agree. It's a debate that can never happen, but I think everybody's thinking it.
It's weird. I remember 20 years
ago. Man, why wouldn't
people were criticizing Ken Griffey for just like watching the ball go out of the park, you know, after he hits a home run. Yeah, they were criticizing him for it.
Well,
like,
what
I
love about situations like that,
should run the bases, like hit a home run or whatever. But
what I love about situations like that, like same thing, like Puig will watch a ball go, right? But the funny thing is the people who should be saying that are Dodgers fans. Like,
right?
You could have had a triple, but you got a single off of a ball you thought was out of the park. But you hear everybody else who that benefits complaining about it. Like, if you're a Yankees fan and the Dodgers are playing like an interleague game against the Yankees, like, you should be happy that he got one bag off of a triple ball. Like, because he was dumb and walked to first. Like,
yeah, you should be sending him a card.
Yeah, I think that's hilarious.
Switching to the NBA. So we read this piece about the Sixers, more specifically about Joel Embiid, about how he basically drinks a pitcher of Shirley Temple.
Are you telling me that a Sixers center is not taking his training regimen seriously? I'll have you know that for one, 8 of the 15 roster members are centers. And they're innovating a new direction that's getting away from the three ball, which is called a 5-man half-court trap. Built on 7-footers.
I like how that was the focus on that piece, besides the Sixers, you know, tanking every year. But like,
chicken fingers.
Joel Embiid brings a pitcher of shorty pebbles. He's like, I know, and the food he eats. Like, dude, I mean, unless you're a fitness freak to begin with, TJ probably is.
No,
anyway, but like,
I don't want
20 year olds don't eat healthy.
To find out the way I was eating when I was 20 years old and scrutinize it. I was a garbage disposal. I'm a little better now. I'm a little better. And that's the only reason I'm not 400 pounds at this point. But, oh, my God, when I was in college, oh, no.
Well, you can't. I guess if I'm Embiid, I'd be a little upset, too, that I heard, you know, they're trying to trade Tony Roten for another center. But, because, you know, you fall down the depth chart. He thought he was going to be small forward center. And now he's going to be like.
Yeah, I don't know. And now he's probably not even going to play this year anyway. So, but still, like, the focus on his eating habits, whatever. Who didn't eat that badly when they were 21?
Right.
Except for TJ, because, you know.
Come on now.
Very healthy pro wrestler.
We went to that bomb pizza place that time before in Long Beach. I had a salad, but I was in the building.
But you were in a house of pizza.
I breathed the crust.
You got some contact grease
aroma.
Calories going on.
Yeah, that was really good. We got to go back there.
That
I see. You know,
good.
It's weird. I never
seen
that chain,
get back here in LA
ever before. And now I see it a lot, like in different places.
Yeah, I saw it in Portland when I lived there.
You know, LeBron's got his own
there too. It's
pizza
like, whoa, it's here too.
Jam going on now.
Yeah.
Can you guys hear about that?
No.
No, he left his McDonald's endorsement, and it's this new, like, sort of, like, Chipotle-style pizza place, like, where you say, okay, I want these 5 ingredients, and then I'm going to have my own pizza in, like,
that's, like, how this
minutes.
Place was. This was great.
Yeah. So it's, like, called, like, Blaze Pizza or something, this or that.
Yeah,
I know
that
they have it in, like, New Jersey, and I'm sure it's in other states, too, but I just have a friend in New Jersey who's eaten there before and really likes it. But, yeah, no, that's LeBron's jam, and he's got some steak in it, so, like, the better he does at being the spokesman, the more money he gets for it. So it's kind of cool to see that rather than, hi, I'm LeBron, eat my garbage burger, you know?
I was going to say, I don't think I remember ever seeing a LeBron McDonald's spot.
I don't either, but the headline
like,
was
I
like,
can't remember
LeBron
one
leaves
now.
McDonald's. Yeah, but I don't remember
In
it.
Fact, I think I've seen
him
endorse literally every other business on the planet Earth except for McDonald's. I'm pretty sure I've seen a LeBron Adidas commercial at some point, but not a McDonald's.
I remember when hi, I'm LeBron. Watch the Lakers.
Yeah, I've seen him do Time Warner Sportsnet commercials for Access Lakers. But I've never seen him do a McDonald's spot.
Oh, yeah.
I remember those. Like,
I remember
Iverson had his rebound.
Like,
I remember all the ads from that time.
Yeah.
Love those.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. David Robinson with Mr. Robinson's Neighborhood from way back, too. That was great. Yeah. Speaking of Kobe, TJ, I don't, because I was thinking, like, we're going to get into a debate about this on Twitter, but I was like, nah. I'll hold it off to the podcast, but, you know, I'm not going to dispute that Kobe Bryant can be a great defender, right? I'm never going to dispute that, but the problem is that he doesn't do it a lot. That's my thing. And you think that's a narrative?
Well, I think people, the problem is
but he
like,
doesn't really defend that much anymore.
When you hear, I don't know everybody on the planet Earth, and I've never heard you say it a lot. And that's why I didn't say anything the other day, because you didn't really cite an example. You just made a joke, and the joke was funny. All the jokes are funny.
Yeah.
You know, they're always funny. But like, commonly I'll hear, you'll see something like that, and the examples they use are not consistent with examples where he clearly is still, you know, an elite level defender. Like, you'll see all these times, like, even as late as last year with, like, him versus Kyrie. Him versus LeBron. And not the second one, but the first Cavs-Lakers game, that was pretty close in the fourth quarter. him versus Chris Paul, him versus Westbrook, and he's handling these guys. They can't, they're not touching paint at all. And then they'll use other examples like giving up drives to JJ Barea, stuff like that. But, and I don't know, maybe it's the player in me saying this, but it's like, there are times when your defense is dependent upon something that's drawn up in the war room. It's, you know, it's dependent on a system. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes you're supposed to give up a drive to a funnel that is supposed to be behind you.
Right. Right.
And I, and the thing is, to me, it's like you didn't really see these questions come up until the last few years. The last few years, it's been like the little rascals on the Lakers. Like the team never met. None of the players match each other's skill sets. They don't play together. And defense has been the worst team element. And so when I see him handling, you know, top 10, top five level players on defense, when he takes it into his own hands, that's why I think, okay, well, it's unfair to judge him based on stuff that is probably a team defense deficiency, like on the year, you know?
Right. Oh, so Jordan Hill isn't an elite rim protector? Is that what you're telling me?
I'm just saying I've seen Jordan take maybe a play or two off. He stands with his feet a little narrow. I don't know.
Sipping a Mai Tai in the third quarter under the rim.
Well, here's the thing. Like, he gets caught ball watching a lot. And it's also kind of unfair.
And I think people use some examples that it's not even really tied to his defense. Like, maybe there's an intercepted pass and to the game, and somebody intercepted, and Kobe didn't even move his feet. The guy took off, and he waited there. But it's like, having been a player in that position before, like, I've had coaches tell me, like, if you can't stop – if you know you're not going to stop that guy, or if somebody else is ahead of you, then you're going to get just as much off of already being set up on the other end – as opposed to chasing, you're going to chase him, probably foul him if you catch him, but you're probably not going to catch him, and then you're not.
Out of position.
Yeah, and then now you're playing on you're playing on 20% energy on the next play, and I'm going to have to take you out. Like, and especially with his age, like, I mean, it's a miracle that his body still works. For one, like, he should look like Steve Nash, but I mean, when you think about it, he should, but. So, I mean, some people use stuff like that as an example. It's like that has nothing to do with how he played defense. And it's an archaic way of thinking, oh, never give up on the play. But it's like sometimes that's the smarter thing to do. You know?
Right. Yeah, it's kabuki. Everyone wants to be like, well, this guy never takes a play off. And look at him hustle. Oh, and that's going to have such an effect on his teammates because they'll see him hustle and then they're going to hustle. Like, what sort of mice do you think the rest of the Lakers are? Like, they've got their own reasons to you know, work their asses off, and they work their asses off to get to the Lakers in the first place. Like, come on. Don't – this is, you know, people sort of trying to imprint their own weird views on sports onto people that actually play it. And it's nonsense. It's nonsense.
And that's why, like, it – like what I was telling Ray the other day is it's narratives. It's really narratives. Mm-hmm. And I mean, there's some truth in all of them, but you know, they're narratives. It's people, it's a theme that people want to be able to, you know, impose on certain situations.
Mm-hmm. I mean, to me, Kobe is an inconsistent defender. Like, there are games where he will absolutely step up. And then there are games where he will just get beat ball watching, which is what he does a lot nowadays, is play center field. Because obviously he's 35, 36 years old, so he can't exactly like step up and like, you know, be how he was when he was 22, 23. You know, he's still a good positional defender when he can be. Mm-hmm. But you know, when you're that old and you want to save your energy for offense, you know what I mean?
Like, I think on a per play basis, he's as good of a ball player as ever been. And I think in what you're saying, like, I agree. Like, there's going to be some stuff in the aggregate that looks different than others, you know?
We'll be right back with more TJ Perkins on the Ray Ray is Fundamental podcast.
This is Dave McMenamin from ESPN, and you are listening to the Ray Ray is Fundamental podcast.
There is freedom within. There is freedom without. Try to catch the deluge in a paper cup. There's a battle ahead. Many battles are lost, but you never reach the end of the road. Why? are you traveling with me?
In a way, maybe we should give him a break. And also, again, he's only played what 41 games in the last two seasons.
Yeah, I saw that number the other day, and obviously, we know how much he's missed, but it's weird, it's crazy to see the number on paper,
Yeah, 40. That's like a fourth of the games in the last two years. So,
yeah, for a guy who's been nails his entire career, it's not like we're talking about some guy where if you get 50 games out of him, usually you're like, well, that was better than usual. No, I mean, it's Kobe. So it's been jarring, and I'm sure it's jarring to him too. Nobody who hates the fact that Kobe's played 41 games in the last 2 years more than Kobe does.
More than Kobe. No.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm not even sure how many he'll play this season, because right now I'm accepting, maybe 45, 50.
Well, you get to a point where you're kind of waiting, all right, well, what might the next thing be,
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Every time I hear something, I heard LeBron got an injection in his back, and then, last season he was having trouble with his knee, and I keep thinking, like some guys, I'm like, God, when do they actually hit that hill where then they're waiting on the next thing? You see that with a lot of guys. And then some guys do it their whole career, like Dwayne Wade,
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think you're going to see more teams sort of go the route that the Warriors and Spurs have. Two of the most successful franchises in the last 5-6 years. But, to rest guys more than usual, and even if they're not, quote, injured, but just to temper these guys for the long term. So, the Spurs, when Tim Duncan was a DNP old, which is my favorite DNP ever. But they did the same thing with the Warriors and sort of conditioning these guys for the long haul, and it clearly worked out for them, because they were in such better shape than the Cavs, regardless of the Irving and Love injuries. They were prepared for a finals, and the Cavs weren't. And LeBron was, his performance was incredible, and nobody would have blamed him if he was like, yeah, I'm just going to retire forever after that.
Oh yeah. I remember just a few games into it. I couldn't fathom what he must have been going through, having worked that, not since Iverson, you see somebody work that hard, not because it's being asked of them, just because that's just how much they're putting out. Mm-hmm. And to go that far, especially he's getting at that age where he's starting to hit the make or break years, where it's I would start thinking about if I want to do this anymore either.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it was Tom Haberstroh, it was somebody at ESPN, but he talked to sports conditioning people, and they're like, yeah, what LeBron's doing right now, especially with the constraints that travel puts on you, is basically the fitness equivalent of doing the Tour de France. In the finals. And it was oh, okay. So this is truly some world-class stuff here. This is not just, LeBron's not trying hard enough. No, he's trying too hard. He's literally trying too hard.
Yeah. It's funny, because we were just talking about Kobe, and it's weird that nobody's more shocked, or it's weird that people aren't less shocked about it, considering he made a career off of never wanting to get off the floor. Not only did he never want to get off the floor, he never wanted to not be the guy making the play.
Right. Exactly.
So, he treated his whole career like LeBron treated the last series. And it's just now LeBron's in that mode. And it's just some guys, we shouldn't be shocked when they start to hit the wall.
Right. Right. It's the natural byproduct of it, but people don't, that's not sort of the calculus that fans put into the whole thing. They're like, well, you try hard, you try hard, you try hard, and then you're 38 and then you retire. Well, no, I mean, if you really go balls out for the entire season, your body just can't keep up with it. Nobody's can. If LeBron's body breaks down, everybody's body is going to break down. Everybody's. So yeah. I think people need to start to factor that into how they view athletes and the last, you know, your hill, the decline, whatever you want to call it, but the twilights of their career. You have to factor that into it when you start evaluating these guys. You have to.
And TJ, remember when Kobe played three straight 48-minute games? He was like 34 at that point. Like, God, what are you doing?
I'm pretty sure he may have played him last season before he went out. he just doesn't believe in looking at his date of birth ever. Like,
right.
I think that guy should just start going the route of OJ Mayo. remember the OJ Mayo Kobe story when he said he went to the camp. It was OJ Mayo, right? He went to Kobe's camp or something coming into the league.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was like, I want to follow, you know, what you're doing and do what you do and mirror you. And he's like, okay, meet me at the gym at 3. And then he slept right on until 3 in the afternoon. Kobe's like, dude, I finished that. I'm at 3 a.m. What are you talking about? 3 p.m.
Yeah, I mean, his work ethic, Kobe, is just incredible, where he would just, like, go to the gym at 2 in the morning and just shoot around till, like, all of the wee hours. Like, what are you doing? You know?
I just think it's insane that he still does that. Like, because, yeah, I mean, yeah, like, I've been wrestling 17 years now. And I've always prided myself on being a workaholic, and, you know, I'll still run the stairs in the hotel or something at, you know, early in the morning. But, like, I think about how more difficult it is now than when I was, you know, 19, 20 years old. And then I look, and he's logged what, like 19 years, 20 years now in the NBA. And I mean, it's like, he's still in his rookie year.
Mm-hmm. Not just 19, 20 years in the NBA, but the Olympics,
yeah,
the pickup game. Oh,
yeah.
Play?
Yeah.
And all the appearances that he would make, that's not even basketball, you know? It's like,
remember when he went to, he played at Rucker right after the NBA Finals?
Yeah. Yes,
why are you playing with kids that just ate lunch at McDonald's across the street? Like, you just three-peated, and now you're playing in Rucker Park. Like,
I think that was really the McDonald's commercial, wasn't it, where he would just play with the kids?
Yeah, and it was weird. Like, yeah, it wasn't even, like, the nice Rucker that they do. Like, now, like, they'll have, like, KD or LeBron do, like, oh, they played at Rucker Park, but they're playing in the gym that's nearby,
yeah,
in, like, a sponsored tournament by Nike, and they play, like, a quarter. Like, he was playing, like, above the rim, like, out in the street in the chain link fence. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Could you do, I mean,
if he broke his leg, how upset
would
he be?
Insanity.
Like, how upset would the Lakers be?
Yeah, exactly.
Twitter would explode if that happened. And, yeah, and you know, you mentioned, you know, his appearances and the Olympics, you know, on top of everything. The man has played 220 playoff games, 8,000 minutes, or like 8,600 minutes in the playoffs alone. That's another 2.5 seasons just straight up thrown into the mix on top of that. So, of course, the man is breaking down at this point because it's insanity.
That's more like 3.5 seasons, probably 8,000 minutes. That seems like
it's a lot. It's
a lot of minutes.
It's like 43 minutes a game over 2.5 seasons. Just nuts.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's like when people say, "Oh, he's played 50,000 minutes in his career," and they don't add the playoff minutes in there.
Yeah, it's, you know, playing for a franchise that, you know, before the last couple of years was in not only a playoff team every year, but a deep one.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a lot of extra games.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Man, we talk a lot about Kobe, but that's all right.
He's the narrative machine, man.
He is. It's like, I wrote about this on my site, like, a long time ago. Like, he's a freaking fire starter. Like, mm-hmm, we talk about Kobe, like, boom, argument. Immediately.
Well, I think about it, like, if modern media was around, like, when Kareem was still playing, you know?
Right.
Like, Kareem was the slander machine. People hated him. I mean, he was so polarizing.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, that's, I mean, it's he literally just swapped out technology and swapped out him for Kobe, and that's what the modern generation is.
Jordan would probably get the same thing too.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah, and of course now we're talking about Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant. Like, oh, we should break these guys up or whatever, or they're gonna leave Oklahoma City. Imagine in the 90s if like Karl Malone and John Stockton were all under Twitter or whatever, you know? God. Like everybody would be clamoring for them to break up too and leave Utah.
Oh, Oklahoma City is the 95 Magic. They're my favorite almost there but won't quite make it team. Mm-hmm. Loaded for multiple seasons and just never got that hump and won finals appearance. Like, they literally reincarnated the 95 Magic.
well, to be fair, the last three seasons of the Thunder, like, they lost a star player in each one.
Oh, yeah.
That sucks. Yeah.
And after trading away, you know, James Harden for pennies on the dollar, you know, the guy who could have salvaged those seasons. And they did it when they didn't have to trade Harden. Yeah.
Hey, keep it down. Bill Simmons is going to call in if you keep saying that.
Oh, man.
That's his all-time favorite subject.
Yeah, it really is.
He talks about the Harden trade during NFL analysis.
I guess that was a trade-off for ESPN talking about NFL during the, you know, MLB season or whatever. So we talked about the Sixers and everything. Do you agree with the way they're doing things right now? Is like lose until we get something going on here? It's tough. Like, how long can you do that? How long can you go win 18 games each season until, you know, the bottom drops out or whatever?
Well, I mean, I as a rational human being, I understand what they're trying to do. I think a season or two ago, the NHL had proposed tinkering with the draft system because they foresaw stuff like this. That's, I think, the NBA is a little bit less cognizant of it.
Yeah.
In terms of like what the Sixers are doing, and they wanted to propose a system where, if they could find a way that after elimination, the best record gets the highest draft pick, something where they can fairly do that, but it's hard because teams are eliminated at different times. Mm-hmm. But this way, you know, you have to win games and have to aim to be a successful franchise as you're building, not after you've built. Mm-hmm. I was hoping that the NBA would start to like tinker with that, but I think that because they're maybe a bigger economical giant than the NHL is, they're a lot more afraid of losing their broad reach on smaller markets. So they don't want to pretend like that's kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm. Adam?
You know, I saw something and I might've gotten it from Bill Simmons again, but somewhere, proposed an idea which I love, and it's that you know, you still have your draft where the worst team picks first or gets the best lottery odds or what have you, but rather than it being based off of end of year record, base it off of when they were eliminated from playoff contention. It's like the first team just totally out of the mix. Okay, you get the number one pick, but then you don't have the incentive to keep tanking after you're out, and mm-hmm. so, you know, you don't have to shut down your players and be like, well, he's got a sprained ankle, I guess we're not going to get 18 more games of the one guy that everyone's going to actually pay, you know, money to see in these games, and you're not going to get these just awful late game situations where they put out a lineup to lose. Like, there's going to be no incentive to do that, and then instead you're actually giving, you know, fans still a reason to come and watch your games, even though you're out of the playoffs, because you don't get anything from losing once you're out of the playoffs. So, you know, you just keep playing your game and you keep playing your stars and fans keep, you know, buying tickets and the, you know, the fans would already know, be like, yeah, we're getting the fifth pick next year. So, like, yeah, so, I mean, that's already taken care of. I would love something like that, personally, because the alternative, you know, what we have right now with teams tanking at the end of seasons, and it's especially bad in the NFL, because watching teams not try hard at football is just
agony. It's so
you really do feel helpless watching the teams too.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It's like, if you're not gonna care, why should I? Why am I devoting eyeballs to this farce? So, and you know, in it's bad in basketball too. It's bad in basically every sport. But just to turn it into a you're out of the playoffs. Okay, now you're the third pick, and then the next one you're the fourth pick. This and that. Give me that instead. But don't give me something where the incentive is to lose as many games as possible over the last 2 months, because that sucks. It sucks for fans. It sucks for the sport. And it basically gives a gift to every team that's, you know, still trying hard. And that I want to see a team that's out of the playoffs just come up and be like, oh, what's up, 2 seed? Bam, you're a 4 seed now. We just beat you by 15. And that's way more fun to me.
First off, go Niners. Here's the thing about the Sixers, though. Like, does it form like bad culture? Because they've been doing it the past couple of years, and all they're going to do is lose. In the meantime, the Rockets rebuilt, but not necessarily lost 65 games each year. They were treading, like they were like right around the playoff picture, and they still got James Harden after that. And boom, they're in the Western Conference Finals last year.
Well, and we have to talk about a miserable trade as well if we're going to bring up that instance. But that's actually not a bad point, though. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. But I think that also kind of illustrates how I don't want to say precarious, but like how sensitive like the market can be in terms of like free agents and trades, because like a lot of times, like, and going back to narratives, like how people think that certain things are a foregone conclusion in the pattern of free agents and trades. And it really isn't. I mean, so much can change overnight with these things. I mean, look at the disaster Lakers trade when they picked up Nash. And that was genius business. And if not for, Nash having freak nerve damage, he probably wouldn't have fallen off a hill in the span of a week. Mm-hmm. And then likewise, look at the trade right before that got canceled. And then look at some of the other random free agent signings and the way that things shift, and like the Harden trade and stuff. There is no rhyme or reason, but people kind of develop an idea that there's patterns to it, but it's like there really isn't.
Mm-hmm. Hey, you just hope you get lucky. I mean, you can't build 16 inches of column space off of that, but it really is as simple as, well, you know, you make moves, you fill out your roster with as many good players as you can find, and you hope you get lucky. Some teams get lucky and some don't. I mean, it really is as simple as that.
Yeah, some of the best free agents went to teams that, like, it wasn't the best situation for them. And they made it work, and for their own reasons, and like, we never know exactly why. And some people choose obvious destinations, and it works out horribly. You know, like, it's just... yeah, it's a lot more precarious, I think, than people give it credit for, let alone, like, you know, the draft and how people approach that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just think that the more you lose, it just becomes like it's almost like a terminal disease. Like, look at Minnesota. They've been losing for how many years now, you know? So, you know, I'm afraid the same thing might happen to Philadelphia to keep doing this.
Well,
you know,
but then all Minnesota had to do was bring in Cassell and Sprewell to you know, actually give Garnett some talent to work with way back then, and they were deep in the playoffs. You know, so one, I mean, you can say something about culture, but at the end of the day, these teams that have losing cultures just probably have bad rosters, and so you fix that, and then all of a sudden, you know, what looks like a losing culture, you know, everyone that was involved with it turns themselves around real quick. And if they don't, you know, they probably get replaced for somebody else. But in terms of the Philly model of tank, 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 then win, the Cubs sort of did exactly that. So, and it's working out all right. But I mean, there were like 3 or 4 years of just abject misery. But you know, it was all part of the plan, and everyone was sort of starting to make fun of Theo Epstein and everyone for it, you know, for the just believe in the plan. But hey, here we are, you know. So if there are ways that you can maximize the talent that you bring in, like if that's your incentive is to get good players, and the way you achieve that incentive is by losing so much that you're high up in the lottery every year, then that's what you got to do. It sucks, and it's not fun for fans. And again, I don't like that system, but that's the way you go about it, apparently.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny because MLB, it's crazy to approach the draft that way because the prospects are brought up totally different. Like mm-hmm. with the minor league systems, it's like there's almost never immediate like impact players in baseball. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then sometimes there's no rhyme or reason to it. Like the Cubs benefited from doing it that way. And then also like look at the Dodgers, $1 billion payroll. Two of the best players are rookies. Like mm-hmm. Seager and Peterson were amazing this year. And it's just so it makes it's weird that like a team like the Cubs can do it so successfully in a league where the draft isn't that like easily manipulated, like your picks and prospects. Whereas like in the NBA, like aside from football, players can immediately be impactful, and yet the Sixers are the Sixers every year. Like, I don't get it. Like, you see it, but every year, I don't know. Maybe it's because they're experimenting with that all-center lineup, and I don't know. But
yeah, well, we'll see what we'll see what's up in 2021 when the Sixers make the Eastern Conference Finals then.
They should introduce relegation like soccer.
There you go.
We'll be right back with the last segment of TJ Perkins, and we're going to get old school with EJ Christian.
This is Adam Jacoby, and if you're looking for a morality play, check out Ray Ray is Fundamental.
Lamar Odom, last time we heard of him, that he was actually speaking for a little bit, but he's still not out of the woods, but it's just a sad situation all around.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to get your thoughts on Lamar Odom.
Well, it was weird for me because I was at the game the other day at MGM and mm-hmm. when a lot of the news was breaking about it, and I didn't even realize Kobe left. Like when they said Kobe left the arena, he took a street taxi all the way to Pahrump, like a common street taxi you just catch on the strip, which I think that's incredible. He just checked himself yeah. out, left, took a that's like an hour taxi. It's not close to go from here to Pahrump. It's pretty
yeah.
far.
I know where Pahrump is, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah?
yeah. yeah. It's really far.
Hey, that's cool. Yes, I mean, it was a really kind of surreal evening. I mean, at least for me, because it was like I was watching a portion of it play out live. Mm-hmm. So,
Adam?
It sucks. And certainly the news that he's starting to come out of it in some small sense is good news, because I've been in that hospital situation. I haven't been in Lamar's situation, but I've been in the ICU and had to sort of confront the "are we ever going to get this person back" question, and it's immensely traumatic for everybody involved. And I've been pretty I'm not even sure what the right word is for it. Disgusted. I've been disgusted at the way that the that so much press has treated Odom as a sort of a character in the Kardashian drama. And so, like, when Radar Online, that bastion of journalistic integrity, decided to run a splash headline of Lamar brain dead, will Khloe pull the plug? And it's like, what kind of monsters are you? I'm sorry if you have to bleep that out, but what sort of thoughts have to go into your head where you see this situation and that's what you want to roll with? One, you got it wrong. Clearly, he's clearly not brain dead. So you messed that up. But two, you know, like, he's not just some little plot device for Khloe Kardashian to, you know, to interact with for some episode of your stupid show. He's a human being. Like, he's a real human being and one who's been through a lot and one who, you know, deserves to have his name said. And not just be estranged, sort of ex-husband. Like, that, let's at the very least humanize this guy who's, you know, going through a literally life-challenging situation right now.
I think that, you know, the fishbowl, like, atmosphere, I can't imagine what a nightmare it must be like to have to try to recover in that atmosphere. You know, like, yeah. And it's totally different the way it is now. Like, I mean, you know, not that this is like a normal thing, but if this had happened at a different point in time, the idea of judgment and the amount of technology that's creating the fishbowl atmosphere, like, I mean, I imagine somebody's recovery from something like this is totally different from somebody that has to deal with it now. Like, it's got to be such a nightmare to have to deal with.
Yeah. And the thing is, it's like people are all looking at, like, oh, he was on drugs, he had hookers. Like, they're judging him while the guy is literally on his deathbed, basically.
It's, yeah.
Like,
well, he was self-medicating. And for somebody who's been through what he's been through, like, it doesn't make it okay. And you know, these are the repercussions of self-medicating like that. But you get it.
Yeah. I mean, why can't we just, like, hope and pray for his recovery?
Yeah,
and
leave it at that. Yeah, just leave it at that. Now, granted, that's not good content generation, it should really be left at that. You know, let the man fight for his life. Just let him do that. You know, this isn't the time or place for reframing it in a this is what is bad about athletes, or this is what's bad about reality television, or this is what's bad about. Or like, here's my thoughts. Like, let the man recover. Let him play his life. Just do that.
The social element of it too. I mean, like, this is it's a generational thing. You know, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It feels like, I mean, this is sort of, I think, like, more like down the road thinking of what, like, now we're observing what social media has given us. You know, like, we always used to think information is a good thing. Technology regarding that, it's always going to be a better thing. This is sort of a way, our window into seeing, well, this is some of the pitfalls in it, because, you know, this is bad empowerment and bad entitlement for people. Like, and especially a lot of times I think people's, intentions and everybody's different, but a lot of people share a common thing, like, in terms of, you know, grass is greener observation. You know, a lot of people, you know, share similar frustrations and pent up, you know, frustration and anguish and things like that. And this is like a mass outlet for people to take out certain things. And it's kind of, it creates bad entitlement, you know? And so I think this is one of the ugly dead ends that social media has given us, is that now we have, like, an endless ocean of sort of a minefield in terms of incidents like this, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
So, bottom line, Lamar Odom, please keep fighting. Hopefully you can pull through.
Yep.
That's all. That's all we got. On that note, Adam and TJ, tell us where we can find you on the internet and your works and everything like that.
TJ, you go first. Everyone knows where they can find me already. I've said it on this thing about like 20 times.
I say it too after the show.
Okay.
Well, there, you do all the plugs for us, right? Well, I mean, for me, you could find me on Twitter at Mascaromanic, Matt. That's Masker with a K. I just, you know what, you can find me on Twitter. you can find me on television on Destination America every Wednesday night on Impact Wrestling and likely at live events throughout your area at some point. And you can check my Twitter for that stuff as well. And that's pretty much me. I'm not too big on the multiple social media platforms. I'm all right on Instagram and Twitter, and that's about it.
Mm-hmm. Adam.
And I'm on Twitter at Adam_Jacoby. Once again, the underscore is very important. And
yes.
And I still pray for the forensics teacher in Wisconsin. And you can find my writing on Blackheart. goldpants.com.
Gentlemen, great discussions. I feel so intelligent being around you two. Let's do it again sometime soon. Cool?
Let's do it all in Filipino sometime, right?
Alright, we will. Alright, later guys.
This is TJP, otherwise known as Manic from TNA Wrestling, and you're listening to the Ray Ray's Fundamental Podcast.
Kicking it old school with Ray Ray and TJ.
Kicking it old school with Ray Ray and EJ. EJ Christian's with me as usual as we talk about the things that we used to love in the 80s, 90s, maybe even 2000s. Pretty old school now, right?
So, yeah. Every time we do this segment, I feel a lot older and older and older. Every time we've gone through, like, wait, how old are they, man? Like, what?
I know, right? It's like, yeah, David Gibson, 1987. Seven. Holy crap.
Holy crap. I mean, I remember in 87, I was living in Brooklyn, New York, and, you know, I didn't have cable, and that was okay back then. That was okay to have cable, because back then, the TV you had back then was good enough for me to hold over.
Yeah. I was still in the Philippines in 87. So, God, that's such a long time ago. I went back to the U.S. in 89. So, yeah. So, we're going to talk about more of our childhood here, because... the way EJ's personality is just like, wow, he seems like everything that's like lighthearted, right? So
yeah.
I was like, maybe he read Archie Comics, and I'm like, so I texted you, and you're like, yeah, I love Archie Comics. I'm like, oh, okay.
I did Archie. Yes, Archie was fun.
Mm-hmm. Because while everyone was into like X-Men and, you know, Punisher or Superman or whatever, those superhero type of comics, right?
Right.
Here we are reading Archie Comics. What is it about Archie that drew you in?
Honestly, it was easy. I mean, like I said, I was a really weird kid, I guess. And mm-hmm. those kind of things. I mean, look, I love my action cartoons and stuff, but I also like simple stuff, you know. Archie was kind of cool. I think, Archie was kind of like my adjustment period when I was starting to mature a little bit into my early teen years. And, mm-hmm. You know, like, I always like comics anyway, to some extent. Those were a lot more accessible. You know, you can find those at the grocery store. You know, you can find those right next to the National Enquirer. That's Archie and Jughead, you know. And,
mm-hmm.
and you know, I always thought those stories were pretty cool. I always found them very funny, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Archie was cool. Like, I used to compare, like, and it's funny, like, years later it makes sense a little bit. I used mm-hmm. to compare Archie to Saved by the Bell in a sense where I did, like, narratives in a sense. You know, you have the two dudes, the two chicks, and Jughead is kind of like Screech in a way, and nerdy, mm-hmm. but Jughead's a lot more cool than Screech, though, let's just be honest. Jughead was a pig.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. That's the thing, like, you know, just like looking at that, and it makes you want to have friends like that, you know? Even Reggie, who always was scheming something, right? Just to impress, you know, Veronica or whatever, or just to impress Midge. But then, you know, it's just like, it's just so cool. Like, you have this kind of like group of friends and, you know, you're just like watching them have those, you know, shenanigans basically in high school. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I was surprised though, like, that, and I'm sure they did this, Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure I remember they did this, but I think they did it at one point. They did have a cartoon for that, right? There was an Archie cartoon, right?
I believe so, yeah. Yeah.
But it never got big. I mean, at least when I was growing up, like, you never heard of an Archie cartoon. And to me, seeing that Archie was still big in the 80s and 90s, like, mm-hmm. why wasn't there one developed, like, for us? I mean, that would have been huge. And especially given the fact that he had that, you know, that nice run of, like, shows, like Saved by the Bell, Temple of Dreams. And mm-hmm. The Archie cartoon would have fit well with that.
Yeah, with TNBC.
Or at least a made-for-TV movie.
I do remember a made-for-TV movie. But it was like,
I gotta find that.
I remember back in, like, I think 1991, 1990, whatever. I just got to the States, and then there was a commercial playing, like, Archie 15 years later or something like that. You know, it wasn't like.
Was there anybody that was like, huge in the movie?
No, I don't remember. In fact, this was probably, like, the first time I talked about it in, like, 20 years. 20 plus years, maybe. Because, right. like, I don't know. It was always in the back of my mind. It's like, yeah. There was an Archie movie, like, but it was, you know, based 15 years after they graduated from high school. So they were, like, in their 30s and stuff like that. You know?
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what. Mark Paul Gosselaar would have been a perfect Archie.
Yeah. Yeah.
You could have picked out guys from, like, those TV shows in the early 90s, you know, Beverly Hills 90210 or Melrose Place, to pick anyone else cool out and take care of mm-hmm. those shows and make them play Archie. Or play Archie as a character. By the way, exactly. I was a Betty guy. I was there for Ronnie. I was a Betty guy. Betty's the brunette, so you know. Yeah.
Betty's the blonde. Veronica's the brunette.
No, the blonde was Veronica, right?
No, the blonde was Betty.
Okay, no. I wasn't the brunette. Sorry.
It's Veronica.
Veronica.
Yeah. and the funny thing is that I thought, you know, now it's like. It feels weird to me that was, like, the portrayals, is that I thought Betty, the blonde look, would be more of the spoiled brat more than the brunette. I don't know. That's just me, I guess, being
right, stereotypical
or whatever, you know? But the blonde was the nice, sweet, next-door type of girl, and then the brunette was the rich, spoiled brat that everybody lusts for, you know? So
yeah,
I thought that was a little weird. Which character did you relate to the most?
Huh?
Which character did you relate to the most?
Jughead, of course.
Oh, we all love Jughead. It's like, all he does...
I mean, Jughead is the like I said, he's like the speech power for our time, but not as dirty, not as a dump. You know, he was more different.
Yeah, he's just there watching everything unfold, and he's just eating burgers the entire time. You know? But how could you not like that guy? Because it's like, again, all he does is eat. You know? Eat at Pops.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
10 burgers.
He was just interesting. Like, the Jughead to me was just interesting. Like, and that's the thing, you know, he wasn't, like, too much for the cartoon or for the comic. He wasn't, like, you know, annoying. He was just right. Like, he was perfect. Like, he fit perfectly with that setting, you know? Mm-hmm. I wish they had made a cartoon for that, for our generation, but fortunately we didn't get that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, by the way, you know, I remember back then, I bought a lot of the comics. I mean, I think it was like $1.25 back then for a comic, or $2.25, whatever it was. And I think it was once a month, right? It came out once every couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
A new comic. And then it had the...
Yeah, exactly.
Do they still sell that now?
I'm not even sure, like, because I've been seeing this a lot from my Instagram friends about how they're buying Archie comics, like... I'm just like, whoa, that's so cool, you know? But I don't know how it is now, like, in 2015. Like, it's got to be a little weird to see these things, like, I guess, updated now, you know?
Well,
like, do they have cell phones now in Archie Land or something?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of ways to go with that. Like, you can do an Archie today. Mm-hmm. I just don't know if it'll be as popular because kids today, don't read as much as they used to. And the only way you're gonna do something, I think the only way you can make Archie relevant again to this day and age is probably do something like visually or digitally,
mm-hmm.
like do shorts on YouTube or like little 5 minute things here. You know, that's all I can see making stuff popular again. Really put a main character, you know. But man,
because it would have worked today because, like, as we discussed like 10 episodes ago, about how Saturday morning cartoons are dead. Saturday morning programming is kind of dead too, in a way that's like we don't even see these kind of shows anymore. You know?
Oh, it's been 10 episodes since that show? Wow.
Yeah, it was a long time ago. But you know what
that
I mean,
was
right?
That is still probably one of my favorite all-time podcasts I ever did in my life.
That was excellent. But back to Archie, it's like, yeah, we all related to Jughead. There was also Moose, the stereotypical dumb jock. And,
yeah.
you know, he's with Midge, who everyone goes after.
Right.
There's Reggie, there's Pop, there's Ethel, who likes Jughead.
Oh, yeah.
And
Ethel,
by the way...
Ethel's annoying.
I never did figure out, like, why does Jughead wear that crown? Like, I never did figure that out. And who wears crowns anyway?
Just to prove... I think it was just to him to prove that I'm the biggest... in the world, and I'm the man, and you can't stop me. I mean, how can I say, he was different, dude. Like, he was showing off. Like, he was the guy. He's like, listen, I'm Jughead, dude. What's going on? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess so, yeah. Like, if you see someone wearing a crown, like, anywhere on the street, you just kind of question it, you know? It's like, why? But, you know, I guess the Jughead is just kind of like, you know.
The only person who wore a crown, I never questioned it, was Macho King Randy Savage.
Well, okay, that's a different story, but like, you know.
In the Macho King, yeah.
yeah, as far as the girls, it's like, I don't know who I really prefer. Like, you know, Betty had her own thing, you know. Like, I like the girl next door type, but then, you know, Veronica, like, you know.
Well, the fact that I had the right girl, you know, like, I thought Betty was the brunette, but she's a blonde. Whoever the brunette was, that's what I like the most. I'm a brunette guy, sorry.
Mm-hmm, yeah. That's fine. Yeah. So, would Archie work today at this point in time?
Well, like
as
I said,
a TV show?
Like I said, I think every anything can work in its place, in its time. It has to adapt to the, I think it's the way he's presented. Like I said,
mm-hmm.
if you did like a digital thing, like I said, a digital platform, maybe do shorts, maybe do something that's appealing to the that age group, because I think Archie was very wide scale appealing to a lot of people, but
mm-hmm.
it really targeted mostly like say 8, 9, 10 year olds to like maybe 15, 16 year olds. That was in fact the core fan base of Archie. Now obviously
mm-hmm.
there were adults that liked it, but if I liked it because they were kids and liked it, they fuck with it. But the way you know the only way you're gonna hook people to watching or reading your stuff is in that age group, like 8 to 16. So they would have, but this day and age, all they can do is they're going to have to, like, do it where it's on Hulu or it's on Netflix or do, like, a series, because that's where everything is now. People don't read as they used to. You'll always have your cult following, but that's, you know, your cult following, you know. They're not going to leave you. It's
mm-hmm.
getting new fans involved and getting new people and new fresh faces to appreciate the work. I think...
Mm-hmm.
For Archie to work honestly, they're gonna have to do so with a little more of the digital platform.
Mm-hmm. Archie has been around since 1939.
Yes.
Wow.
That's insane.
That's some longevity right there,
well,
man.
Well, the fact that they haven't done anything with Archie on the screen or anything in a long time gives it room. Like if Netflix decided they want to do an Archie series. Or Hulu, for example, a series,
mm-hmm.
I guarantee you that there's a lot of people who will be into that. I would, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I'm sure, like, you know, my son, who's 2.5 years old, down the road, I'll show them, you know, and they may have a new following, you know, down the road. So,
mm-hmm.
and like I said, because it hasn't been done, it hasn't been overdone, really, on that platform, there's room for that to become a success. Should they go that route moving forward? I think it should. I think it should try new avenues. I mean, I'm not sure how the comics do these days. I'm not sure if the distribution is still pretty high, but I mean, you can make. I think they should definitely try new avenues when publishing their work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I guess what we should do is, I don't know, email Archie Comics, tweet them, send them a message on Facebook, something like that. Let's start a petition or something like that.
What we should do is, like, when we go shopping again, is like, go look in the aisles and see if they still sell that stuff.
Yeah. That's what I'll probably do tomorrow, like, on the grocery store. Like, I'll just go
too.
Over there.
It's Saturday. Well, of course, on a Friday night, Saturday morning.
Yeah.
That's a shopping day, so I'll be going to my wife and say, hey, wait, before we buy the stuff, let's check Archie. See, Archie's on the rack.
I might even just buy one just for the heck of it and put it on Instagram. Like, hey, yo, Archie Comics, man. Archie Comics for life.
Yep.
You know?
Oh, yeah. No doubt.
Yeah, exactly. So, while you guys were enjoying your superhero comics, again, X-Men, Superman, Punisher, Batman, I was enjoying the lighthearted life of Archie Andrews. That's his name.
And Jughead. Don't forget
Jughead. And Jughead Jones and Reggie and Betty and Veronica.
He's a real star of that whole thing. Dude, honestly, I know Archie's Archie. He's a little preppy guy. Mm-hmm. But Jughead's a real star of that whole thing, to be honest.
Does he have his own comic, right?
He did, right? He did. Yes, he did.
Yeah. Everybody should have, yeah.
There were a few spin-offs actually on that show, on that mm-hmm. comic. I think mm-hmm. even Betty, if I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong on this though, but I think even Betty Veronica had their own thing for a while.
Well, I know that Betty, you know, my girlfriend at the time also bought like Archie of the Double Digests. Remember those?
I think so.
So she left them with me. Like, I don't know if it was like, I guess, you know, because we were still together, so she left them with me. And she never got them back. So I still have the Betty Veronica Double Digest that she left. I still have it. Like 13 years or whatever she left it, you know?
I don't know who won that battle between you two when you guys broke up, but I think you still won in the end because you still have that stuff.
Yeah, I wish. I know she bought a bunch of them, but like she just left one with me. So.
You should call her back now and ask her, hey, do you want your stuff back? And if you're like, nah, never mind. I'm keeping this stuff. Mine.
Yeah, so I guess I won that battle because I won the Betty and Veronica Double Digest, whatever it is. So
yeah, so
Archie Comics, hopefully there will be, if a show comes out on Hulu or YouTube or whatever, you know, man, I will just be like,
I will do a freaking watch party if they had I will call you, like, dude, even in California, man, dude, let's do like a syndicated watch party, like one in California, one in Miami.
Yes. Yeah, I will FaceTime you or something like that. It's like, hey, we're watching the Archie premiere or whatever it is, you know?
A synchronized watch party.
Yes, exactly. So, yeah. All right. So, Archie Comics for life. And, yeah, I can't believe it's been going on since 1939. It's going to outlive us. It's going to outlive us. Thanks, Ernest.
Yeah.
What's up, y'all? This is Sharif, and you're listening to the Ray Ray is Somewhat Fundamental podcast.
Longest podcast ever in the history of Ray Ray is Fundamental. But, hey, it was all worth it. The discussions were great. The old school segment was great. So I'm happy. And if you listen to all 90 minutes of it, I thank you from the bottom of my heart, because that's a long, long podcast. Thanks to TJ Perkins, aka Manic. Thanks to EJ Christian for doing the old school segment. Of course, thanks to my co-host Adam Jacoby for being patient and, you know, doing this podcast after, like, you know, several notices of, you know, oh, this podcast is canceled because, you know, of circumstances. So, thanks again to everybody. In the meantime, you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. You can also find a podcast on Stitcher and RareRay.net, and this show is syndicated by the Happy Hour Network. You can find me on Twitter at The No Look Pass, and you can find the podcast Twitter at RareRayIsFun. Also, I want to plug something really quick. I do another podcast, but it's specialized this time. My friend John Canton invited me to do a wrestling podcast on the site. So the TJR Wrestling Podcast is where I'm at now when it comes to wrestling. I co-host it, and you should check it out. It comes out every week. There's actually a schedule for this thing, possibly every Tuesday night or Wednesday morning, where in this podcast, Ray is Fundamental, I do it whenever I damn please, really. So there's no schedule for Ray is Fundamental, but for the TJR Wrestling Podcast, it's every Tuesday night or Wednesday morning. So please check that out. Subscribe to iTunes or subscribe to SoundCloud, or, you know, follow TJRWrestling.net. That's all I got. Just remember, Rayray is fundamental, and you don't need a library card to check me out. Until the next episode, party people. Whenever that is.
When I like the fact that you have a friend, Rayray. Game over, yeah!
Molded.